Ulukut, welcome to another episode of Spilling Labrador Tea Under Cedar Trees with Kate and Mads.
Goy, hello. We are very excited to be doing, once again, another episode.
Another one.
For our second season of colonization across the globe.
Around the world.
Around the world. You know what? Unless flat earthers.
Yes. We love them.
That's another episode.
Yeah.
All right, but on our journey, where are we going today?
Today we're going to Alaska.
Alaska. You've been there.
I have been there.
Just recently.
Just, what, 2 weeks ago?
I think so. Two, 3 weeks ago? Two weeks ago. I think it's 2 weeks
ago. Something like that.
Yeah.
And that's where we met our lovely new guest.
Yay! We are so excited to have Charity on. Charity, did you want to introduce yourself?
Yes. I'm so happy to be here virtually and to see a familiar face. I just want to start off by saying how proud I am of these two. I was just telling them before this, the way that Native people document our history, especially back home in Alaska and Samoa, is we do it in person, orally, from one generation to another. So from our grandmother to our parents, and then to us as kids. And being able to produce a scholarship like this podcast, it's really important and it's really critical work when we think about storytelling and ways we could build resilience and build coalition between Indigenous groups across the world. So I'm really thankful to be here. And I just want to start by introducing myself in my native language, because it's something that a lot of, you know, my elders weren't always able to do. And again, I'm so thankful to be here. But Baka, Winga Yupilo, Yuktuna Guvach, Chayimunga, Kagakinak Alaska, and Anchored Alaska. Hello, my name is Charity Ropati. I am Yupik in Samoan, and for those who don't know, that's Alaska Native and Pacific Islander. I was born and raised in Anchorage, Alaska, and my mom originally comes from the Native village of Kangalikinak, Alaska, and my dad is originally from American Samoa. And I always get like mixed reactions when I tell people that, but Anchorage is like very, very diverse. You have lots of kids who are also mixed just like me, but it's also home to one of the most diverse school districts in the nation. So my work lies within that. I was able to pass policy that allowed students of color to wear their cultural regalia when they cross the stage, because what we're seeing statewide in Alaska, but even nationwide, is that there is a graduation crisis with our Native kids and with our Pacific Islander kids. And all of that is rooted in how we think about climate justice, because my belief is that when we create safe environments for our kids in the classroom, the STEM field will be more diverse. Our leadership will be more diverse. And when we pull the steering wheel, and when Native people pull the steering wheel for that, I don't think we'd be in a climate crisis to begin with. I'm also a student here at Columbia, so I'm zooming in from, or coming in from Manhattan on Lenape lands. Really thankful to be here. Really thankful for the people I met here. I go to school at Columbia, I study civil engineering, and I'm also a scientist, and I do work on how the ecology in Alaska is affected by climate change. So a lot of my work intersects with education, climate, but it's also rooted in Indigenous science. And I also believe that, you know, some of the smartest people in my community don't even hold degrees from these institutions. We shouldn't have to push our kids to go to schools like these. And there are people in my family who are able, you know, to hunt for like seal and walrus, and that is phenomenal and valuable knowledge, and things that a lot of white scientists aren't able to do. So I'm really proud of like my cousins and like my nephews and nieces who are able to do that, who are able to live off the land. And I'm thankful to go back to the village in the summers. But yeah, that's just a little bit about me. Again, I'm so thankful to be here, and I'm so excited for all of this.
Yeah, we're so excited to have you. And I was telling Madeline after you and I met in Alaska that I walked into this room and I was saying hi to some folks that I know, that I look over at you and you're just like waving at me. And I was waving back. And then I was like, oh, maybe her and I have met before. And then you came up to me and you're like, I've never met you before, but I feel like I know you. And I was like, you have such a beautiful spirit. I was like, cool. So I'm glad that we get to continue to talk together.
I love that, because usually she's the one that's walking up to everyone being like, hey, I want to talk to you. I want to know you.
Yeah.
So that's great.
She's so sweet. Also, you had like some of the best fits during the conference too. So I'm really thankful to be in community with you, and community with you as well. So it's great building these relationships and this coalition.
Definitely. Yeah. So without further ado, it's amazing already what you've shared, because like that is something that is very, very important. And we've heard stories before, not necessarily like shared on the podcast, but just in our day-to-day lives about like, especially around the graduation numbers and things. And I know for myself personally, I think my graduation year was probably one of the largest in a while that people had said that a large group of Indigenous children had graduated high school, especially from our high school. So it's really important that like that story is still known, that this is what is occurring and that needs to be changed. And
yeah, definitely. And even like thinking we graduated 10 years ago now, but I didn't even think to wear regalia for my graduation. You know, like I didn't think that was going to even be an option. Or even like just like seen like and heard and like respected and loved. Like I don't think, you know, 10 years ago is not that long ago, but still long ago. But it's nice, it's really special to hear that like you've created the space for young people to be able to like wear our regalia very proudly walking across the stage at a very big accomplishment, and to like be seen, loved, and respected. And celebrated in the way that they deserve.
Yeah, that process, like even crossing the stage, I never thought it was possible either. And when we think about, you know, I always take every chance and opportunity. Like it's important, especially for young ones. It's like you're never too young to get into this work. And for Native people, you know, this is something we don't choose. I'd rather, you know, very much rather be at home and like living life, but you know, I have to go to school and I have to do these things, and we have to work to implement these like local policies, and implementing these local policies have such big impact because these are things my brother will be able to do and participate in when he graduates from high school. But even all of that was so hard. Like me, my friend Nishe Andrews, her mom Jacqueline also worked on that, and my own mom Elizabeth Lozano, and this is something that wouldn't have been done without the community there in Anchorage. And I'm really thankful for all of them, and for Doreen Brown. Like I say these names because it's important that I bring them with me in every podcast and every space that I have the honor to speak with. But it's important that we're able to like, you know, wear a regalia and kind of show everyone like, yeah, we did that, and look how proud we are of our heritage. Like these are things that, you know, you thought we couldn't do. And a lot of teachers, there's some great educators, but then there's some really, for lack of better language, like racist and bigoted administrators and educators who don't know how to support the dreams of our Native kids. And it's important we wear regalia, and we wear our like beluguks, which in Yupik culture are like seal fur boots and seal made out of seal skin as well. It's important that we take every step along the stage with that, because we carry, you know, how as corny as it sounds, like I don't care, we carry our ancestors with us when we cross the stage like that. And all of that's rooted in like climate justice, all of it's intersectional, because like when you think about Western education and how it's functioned in the past, like it's crazy. It's not just in Alaska, but it's happened in Canada, it's happened in the lower 48, it's happened in Hawaii, and I'm not gonna say it's happened, it's happening in all of these places. Because you think about our history, you think about these policies, you think about all these barriers, there's so much things that we all have to jump through just to get to where we are today. Those are things we should have never had to face as kids, like in this century. So I'm really thankful that policy's still in place, but I'm immensely thankful for all the Native femmes as well back home in Anchorage who also like co-led that, and thankful to participate in that and speak. Like it's insane, like there's so many things I can get into, but like the hate that we receive too, it's absurd. Like I was like, dang, like you guys don't like Native kids, huh? Or it's just like even from your own peers too. But
yeah,
you know, it's important that people know that those type of things are possible, and it's something that I want to see nationwide. And yeah, there's more that I can get into, but I'm really thankful that you guys are highlighting that, because I feel like now that I'm about to graduate from college, like I forget that, because it's so stressful, and you're like so in it at school, you're just like stressed about, you know what I mean, about these deadlines. So like thank you so much for reminding me of that and grounding me.
No, it's important to remember that, like, our accomplishments are our ancestors' accomplishments, and that we need to remember that, like, they're very proud.
Yeah,
they're very proud of where you're at and where you're going, and all the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you.
That kind of touched on a little bit on our first question of, mm-hmm. like, the impacts of colonization. So if you're comfortable with sharing, like personal experience with colonialism, or if you're comfortable sharing, like, the impacts on your community, that'd be great.
Yeah, so my family, we reside on Dene Ina lands, which are the original stewards of the land in Aklutna and Anchorage, Alaska. And I totally forgot the name of the chief, but he's this really amazing educator and culture bearer that works at the Anchorage Museum, who kind of reminds folks in Anchorage, because so many conferences are held at Anchorage. Some of the biggest climate conferences are held in Anchorage, but people forget, like, whose lands those are. Those are Dene Ina Elena. Those are Dene Ina lands. And they're thriving people. They're beautiful people. They're people that have lived there for thousands of years. And when we think about the history of colonialism, especially in Alaska, Russian exploration was one of the first instances. So they came to Alaska, they came to regions in the Aleutian Islands, the Unangan people, to the southeast, to Anchorage. And, you know, there weren't a lot of Russians. Like, I learned that there were only about, like, 600 to 700 Russians at that time, which is absurd. I was mm-hmm. like, if I knew about that, like, you know what I mean? Like, write up all the natives. Yeah. But, you know, the Russians inflicted just really bad things, especially to people in the Aleutian Islands and the southeast. And so we think about, it's just, like, really deep, like, enslaving native people, taking their women. And mm-hmm. these aren't isolated stories. These are things that have happened worldwide, from different settler colonial entities. And mm-hmm. you know, Russians really inflicted a lot of that towards native people, but despite all of that, like, we're still thriving. And then another big thing I talk about when I talk about, like, place of history, is missionization, the effect of missionization. So a lot of these, like, Catholicism, I should know all these names, but I haven't really read up on history, but yeah. So they all came to Alaska and divided up Alaska pretty much into separate sections on a map and said, well, this religion is in charge of that. And so for my region, Russian Orthodox was in charge of our region. And so some priests, I don't want to say some priests were better than others, but some priests allowed our people to speak our languages, while mm-hmm. there are other priests in different regions who had no language policy. Mm-hmm. And so in our region, the Moravian churches, there were Bibles that were translated in Yupik. But it's all really interesting because religion is, like, a very touchy subject, especially for Native people. And when we think about because boarding schools also happened in Alaska, and racism also, it's still there, but it also very much happened, especially, like, in the southeast, where there are signs that said, like, no natives and no dogs allowed. So associating our people with dogs too. And Elizabeth Paradovich was this really amazing, you know, Tlingit woman who led the movement, specifically, like, the civil rights movement for Native people in the southeast, and passed the first you know, Civil Rights Act before Martin Luther King, which is, like, something more people should know about. And this was led by Native women. And so a lot of these things, and when we think about the success of Alaska, most of it's led by Native women, and most of it's led by our moms, our aunts, our grandmothers, who do such amazing work back home in our community. And you know, luckily I grew up understanding that history. And when you go to school in Anchorage, you don't learn about that. You don't learn about the Dene Ina. You know, land acknowledgements just started becoming a thing mm-hmm. with the start of the pandemic. They just started becoming a thing. And even when we think about that, we need people to think about how we can think about, you know, what our world would look like beyond that land acknowledgement, what our world would look like if Native people had full sovereignty to begin with. And that scares people.
Mm-hmm.
But we really need people to think that, because data shows that when Indigenous people are fully in charge of the land, have full Indigenous land management, that's where forests are healthier, our waters are healthier, our tundra is healthier, our barriers are healthier, our salmon is healthier. That is what data shows. That is what Western science shows. And so when we think about the history of Alaska, it's beautiful. Like, it's, there's some really messed up stuff that people need to learn about, but people should also focus on, you know, ways that we have always built resiliency, ways that we've always managed our lands, ways that we've always built community, because they're very beautiful. And even like our ways of spirituality and Yupik culture is a really beautiful thing. And so yeah, it's just interesting because I feel like whenever I talk to like non-natives about like, you know, native history, they love focusing on the trauma, you know, of our history, but there's more to it than that. I mean, like, despite all of that, we're able to find laughter, we're able to find humor. I mean, you know how native people are, you know you're part of the community when they roast you and make fun of you. Yeah. So it's just the way we've built community, and it's a really beautiful thing. And so a lot of things, these things were told orally, and so it's really amazing and beautiful to see all of these Native creatives, especially back home in Alaska, using mediums of art to really talk about, you know, what's happening. Like, I'm thinking about my friend Maka Montour, who's Tlingit, and who uses video and like social media to talk about the liberation within our communities, but also to document how beautiful our cultures are, especially back home in Anchorage. And I'm really thankful for people like her. But yeah, I love when natives through social media post your accomplishments. You know, people are always going to hate, but keep doing it. Like, I see you. I support that. And there are ways that history lives on, and it can live on by documenting it, whether it's on paper or using video or even using this, like, podcast. It's a really great thing. But yeah, that's just like a, I guess, like a really broad history of, I guess, like Alaska. But yeah, I'm really thankful for home. And despite feeling homesick at times all the way here in New York, I know that home will always be there. Mm-hmm. My family will always be there. And I'm really thankful to return very soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that the religious groups,
that they broke them
they
up.
They broke up.
I didn't know that either.
Alaska. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. I say that because I'm a big nerd. I love maps. I study geography. Yeah. And like human geography and social geography, so like seeing how like people determine where other people go and like use the land is very interesting to me, and just how like that centralization of power and like who can speak the language and who's not allowed to speak the language, determining on like where you are geographically located. Fascinating. And yeah, I completely agree. Like, there's three whole Native women that live in this house, and it's loud.
What are you talking about? We're quiet. Always.
Our neighbors love us.
Especially when we get all of our friends together.
Yeah.
All rugged, as you should.
On the front lawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that is really fascinating, because then that just, like, shows the impact of, like, depending on who came in to do the colonization, it kind of, a lot of it's the same, but there are some differences.
Yeah.
And seeing, like, especially like, we didn't, not everyone's touched on religious factor of like how that's had an impact or that part of it, other than like Catholicism was a huge one just for like residential schools down here. They were the main culprit. Mm-hmm. But to hear that like there was like the Russian Orthodox and things like that, and that depending on where you were, you were allowed to speak your language, or like they were trying to assimilate you, but like through something that you were still tied to.
Mm-hmm.
So that was just, that's just a very interesting approach to that.
That's an interesting colonial tactic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I looked up the name, but formally it's called the Alaska Community Plan. And I got it right. I was scared that I didn't get it right, but my region, they assigned the Moravians to it, and pretty much in 1890, a group of white priests came together and they're like, let's divide Alaska, and this is who we have denomination over. This is who we have autonomy and power over.
Mm-hmm.
And that effect of that decision can be seen to this day. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more to Alaskan history, but Harold Napoleon, Dr. Maria Shaw Williams talks heavily about this. And these are really amazing Alaskan Native scholars, but when we even think about the effect of epidemics in Alaska. So at this time, like in the late 1800s, Red Cross didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these Salvation, like these things, like Red Cross didn't exist, these support systems that are in place to support people after something traumatizing happens didn't exist. And so when sickness hit coastal communities in Alaska and communities within Alaska, when epidemics hit, smallpox, all of that, entire communities would be lost, and you would see one to two survivors from each community. Mm-hmm. And I don't, it's hard to talk about, like, even like I feel that even now, like, you know, in 2023,
mm-hmm.
It creates it's traumatizing. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to see people leave their community being the only survivor and have to bury their loved ones. And so traditionally, like, Yupik homes were built underground. And so also, I'm really sorry if this is like a heavy topic, but I think it's important to talk about these things. But, you know, they're built underground to protect from like the natural conditions in Alaska, because it gets cold. It's hard mm-hmm. to live there. And the fact that Native people are able to live there, like, we're very smart people. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, after a massive death like that would happen to an entire community, like, you don't even have time to bury. Like, you would just have to let the homes collapse. And that's what a lot of people had to face. And so it creates a generation of people that don't talk about that. And as kids, I was even taught to pretend as if something didn't happen when something mm-hmm. traumatizing happened. And that's something Native people, I feel like, all across the world were taught, because there are different traumatizing events that we all went through, but mm-hmm. especially the effects of the epidemic hit really hard towards our communities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not our fault. Like, and so it created a generation of, you know, our own grandparents who don't talk about those things. And even that history of Alaska, it's important that people know about that. But then when you think about, like, our generation, I don't like calling myself Gen Z, but a lot of people call me that, so I guess, like, Gen Z, but you see so many people in our generation who are revitalizing those practices, who are dancing, like, especially in Alaska, with Blackcomb and Acres, we saw all those people dance. It was, I love it, like, the drumming, like, I was, like, getting into it, like, you know, dancing and everything. Like, it's a really beautiful thing, and so it's important people also, like, know that history of, like,
mm-hmm.
epidemics and, like, you know, colonialism and, you know, understanding those things, but also understanding, like, ways that our people have been revitalizing culture, building resiliency, dancing, sharing stories through love, bringing back, like, songs that we thought we forgot, like, from, like, mm-hmm. one tribe to another. Like, these are things we've always been doing, and it's also important people know that. But shout out to my mom, because she's the real scholar here. She taught all of that to, you mean, you know how moms can be, like, our Native moms.
Yeah.
There's, like, little six-year-old kids saying, focus on education, like, know your history, do this because your people are looking towards you. Do you know that expectation that you as Native kids have always held? So I hold her words with me, and, like, I feel I love our moms. I love my mom a lot, but yeah, it's important to know that history.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And it's almost like for the older folks to be in, like, you survived, so just keep moving.
Yeah.
Right. And it's definitely like a survival tactic of you made it, so now you have to go farther.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not to forget what happened, but to use what happened as, like, fuel to be able to continue your journey, right? And transform that into coming from a place of love and resistance. Because those things, I think, they are related. I think a lot of resistance comes from love, and a lot of resistance makes love.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of it has to, like, if even just, like, looking at it from, like, an outside perspective, I can see how, especially, like, when traumatic things happen, that, like, based off of, like, that huge trauma that, like, all of a sudden, like, whole families were wiped out. It's that idea of, like, you couldn't even do your practices that you would have probably had, because, like, I imagine the people who held that knowledge, a lot of them ended up passing as well. And so that wasn't something that was able to be passed on. And so instinctually, your only thing is just, like, shut down and just move forward,
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And so it's those things where, like, you might not recognize the impact until a few generations down, where you're like, whoa,
yeah,
we lost so much from this.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is hard.
Mm-hmm. But so thankful to, like, the ones that, like, have
been
able to pass things down
mm-hmm.
to us. Yeah, I think now we get to, like, pass down knowledge more creatively and more inclusively, that, like, supports a lot of different kinds of folks learning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely a beautiful thing. And I think even like knowing that history, like I'm really thankful for Père Napoléon, who really, you know, sat down and kind of wanted to understand why, you know, there were issues and there are issues in our communities. And really understanding like what he was like, what happened, and he documented it. And one of the things he brought up was the effects of epidemics. And one way we move forward and we think about healing is knowing. Mm-hmm. We have to understand what happened. And I'm really thankful for the scholarship he produced. Because I know for me, even when we talk about dysfunctionality within our families and we talk about having healthy families, it's important. All of that is linked with what happened historically to our mm-hmm. people, with epidemics, with colonialism, mm-hmm. even with genocide, because with that mm-hmm. epidemic, that was literal genocide.
Yes.
And it's important we know and understand that history so that we take that with us and we heal from it
mm-hmm.
and we show up for our community and show up for our loved ones, because it's important. So I'm really thankful for him. And I feel like at the point of my work, especially being so young, I used to get so upset when, because it's normal, I don't think it should be normal, but for Native kids to like face so much discrimination and racism, I would get so upset. I would like, you know, fight back with words,
yeah,
like screaming, crying, literally fighting for my life. And I come to a point where I'm just content being in community with my people and showing up for them, because what we've seen, especially with even the Arctic encounters, like mm-hmm. that, it was heavy being there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if those conferences actually worked, you know, if those spaces primarily made by non-Native people,
yeah,
you know, actually worked, we wouldn't be at the state we're in right now.
Exactly.
And who helps us out better than anyone? It's our people, ourselves. It's other people. It's other Native people in the community. So I think I'm at that point in my life where I'm content with that. And so it's focusing on how we build more coalition mm-hmm. with Native people across the world, because mm-hmm. and it's something that like our fellowship does too, which is pretty cool. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I'm at that point, and a lot of it starts with just knowing our shared history, so that, you know, healing circles work, but we could sit and like laugh and like roast each other, but then yeah. we also have moments where we could talk about it, and mm-hmm. I think it's really beautiful to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To have a balance.
Yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm.
yeah
because I mean, you don't want it all to be heavy, and but at the same time, you don't want it, especially for outsiders to think that we're just like, it's a joke, like
mm-hmm.
that we can take it, you know, lightly. But it's like, no, like properly understanding that like you have to have that balance to be able to like not only for ourselves but for those that are going to be learning from it, to understand that like this is heavy, but like this is also like we're also joyous and like mm-hmm. thankful for being here and like still being able to move forward as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, we're definitely multifaceted people.
Yeah. What?
Yeah, that's hard for me to say. Like pronounce.
Yeah. You slid.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you've been very great at like touching on like getting to like some of the stuff that's already been in place, but are there certain policies or like certain aspects within your community or just communities that you've seen that have like done the work to start doing reclamation or just decolonization in any form?
Yeah. I think when I think of that, I think of my own friends. Mm-hmm. I think of especially like Native kids within the Arctic Youth Ambassador mm-hmm. program back home in Alaska. Zoe Oklesic does really great work back in Nome, which mm-hmm. is a primarily a Nupak community back in Alaska. And I'm really proud of her. And then I also think of my friend Sierra Anderson, who is a femme in STEM, does really great work with the Alaskan Native Science and Engineering program. Mm. Who they're able to also like bead and contribute in their cultural practices. And it's work like that can like, no, it's really impactful work. I think of my own friends and the work that they're doing, and I'm really proud of them. And then I also think of my friend, like, Sam Schimmel and his operation with Operation Fish Drop, where he provided, like, thousands of fish to Native people in Anchorage. And when we think about what's happening currently in Alaska, there's no salmon in any of our rivers because of the climate crisis. There's rising sea level, there's coastal erosion. So I'm really thankful for his work contributing to food sovereignty. And so those are the people I most want to highlight when I talk about, like, these are my friends. And that's how you build community with people. You build these friendships, and then, you talk business. That's something I was taught to by my friend, and I'm really thankful for him. But I think about their work, and I also think about myself. Like, as we're taught to be humble, but my mom always taught me to be confident. So, like, my work in, decolonizing education and making these spaces as safe for Native kids as possible. And then there's an entirely different sector where, as we all know, people are obsessed with, like, doing research in the Arctic. A lot of white people are obsessed with that. They want to be there. They think it's cool. They think it's, like, quote unquote, exotic. And I'm like, well, these are places we've lived in for thousands of years. Like, we just want our fish. We want to be able to provide for our families. We don't want our people going hungry. That's, that's our way of living. And when you think about Inuit, that's Inuit ways of living. We only take what we need. And that's something that we're all taught. And if these extractive industries, went by those type of values, Alaska would be a lot better than it is right now. And we would have salmon in our rivers, and we would have the things we need. And I don't know, all of it goes back to, it's even questions we can ask ourselves, and questions that, like, even you guys can think about is, if we had all the resources we did, what would you be doing? And this is actually something that I also want to highlight. So the United Nations Forum of Indigenous Peoples is going on here in New York City. And I was able to go and to also see some of my dear friends, Maka and Ruth, but also I met some really cool other youth, Jerome and Sunshine. And Jerome is a Pacific
We know Sunshine.
Islander.
Sunshine
Yeah,
and I
I
work
love
together.
Sunshine. Yeah, I love Sunshine. Like, one of my favorite people ever. Like, we were having fun, and but we also asked questions about, like, what would we be doing if we had all the resources, if our communities had all the resources we had. And that's something I also want people to think about too, because you deserve to think about that and to think about, your dreams like that. Like, what our world would look like if we reach liberation. And that's something I think about a lot, because I definitely would not be doing what I'm doing now. I'd still want to be, like, a scientist, like an engineer, but I would definitely dedicate more time to, like, skateboarding and, like, skateboarding with my younger brother and, like, being with him, because I feel like I miss so much of, oh, I don't want to cry, but so much of his life being so far from home and going to school. So I really want people to think about, what our world would look like if we reach liberation. And that prompt was shared by this really amazing Samoan poet and organizer from Oakland, Teresa. I love her. I'm, like, her biggest fan. But I really want people to think about that, because when we think about that, I think those are steps towards healing. And when you apply yourself and take steps towards reaching your dream, but also taking steps towards protecting yourself and feeling safe, especially in a capitalistic world, I think that's a really beautiful thing. And that's all rooted in decolonialism, because we're still here. Like, they really thought, you know what I mean? So,
They thought they had us.
Yeah, they thought they had us in the first half.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's.
That's a great question.
I like that wording of a little bit better than our question of being like, what more needs to be done? Being like, if you had all the resources, what would that look like? Yeah.
It just make you think of, like, what else would we be doing? You work in justice and I work in international development. What would we do?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. I will have to ponder that
I know,
question
me
for
too.
sure. We will answer that question
Charity.
in another episode. For sure. Oh
Yeah, how
my gosh.
the tables have turned.
right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to be prepared for this. No, I think that's, and I think that's great that you guys are having those conversations as well, and mm-hmm. and basically doing like the work that we're doing, but like in an actual setting where like those are people that are purposely working in those fields to make better for their communities, and representing all these different Indigenous communities, and like getting to speak with like-minded people but with different perspectives and different circumstances, and mm-hmm. getting to hear kind of what their view is on that. And I think if we all came together, yeah, if we all came together and started asking that question more often, I think we would probably get so much more work done.
So much more work done. And then like folks really realizing that what they're doing is harmful.
Mm-hmm.
Like the folks in like resource extraction and who are benefiting from it, being like, oh, I suck. But like you suck in a way that I understand that you're trying to provide for your family.
Yeah.
And so how can we do that differently?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I guess recognizing that like sometimes what we do to benefit our families is
hurting another,
is detrimental to others.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And trying to find a way that like everyone benefits and everyone has everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
Access.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, our next question is basically that of being like, what more needs to be done, in your view, for there to be proper decolonization, and like just in general, like what work needs to be done to like feel like we're back at a place that people are able to access resources and just have everything they need, which is a huge question.
Yeah, yeah, I think just giving our land back. And that scares a lot of people because, you know, they don't know what that looks like, but it's already happening. I mean, there's instances in the United States where it's happening, and people really need to look at the data, because it shows that Indigenous land management works. It works. Our world is healthier that way. Our environment is healthier when we have sovereignty. And when we have full land management over that. So I think giving us back our autonomy, because either way we're going to come and take it back, you know, there are ways that we're already doing it in every industry. And then the importance of youth, like I think it's really important that in every aspect, when we think about all these international conferences that are happening, and even with stuff with the United Nations, always include our kids and our youth. Because we have the ability to dream of a world outside of all of this, outside of colonialism. And some of the smartest people that I've met are other kids, and especially like other younger Native kids. They have all of our answers. And so I think that's just another, like, you know, another huge component. Turn towards our kids, turn towards our Native kids, because we have the ability to dream of a world that hasn't been affected by mm-hmm. colonialism, capitalism. And anyone can hold imagination, but there's something about Native youth imagination, Native kid joy. And it's something I talk about a lot, even within mm-hmm. my own work. Focus on that. And when you think about your work, think about ways, like it can even be very small, like how do you support the dreams of your younger nephews and nieces back home in your community? How do you support the dreams of, you know, your younger brother, your younger sister back home in the community? It can be as simple as that. And for me, when I think about my work in education and climate, because both of those things are very intersectional, I think about, well, how do I make their experiences in education a lot better than mine? And I'm thinking about my younger brother and sister. One is 18. My brother's 14 now. Like they're old now, but like even with my brother, he wants to be a professional skateboarder. Like thinking about ways we support those important dreams, and these are dreams we all had, mm-hmm. but at some point in our life there were people who said, you can't do that, that's not possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. Like think about ways we support that, and it can be mm-hmm. as small as that. Or when you think about even our work in like our work internationally,
mm-hmm.
go back to your community, go back to those kids and say, how would this policy, how would this type of work, how is what I'm doing benefiting them? Mm-hmm. That's where it matters. We have to create healthier communities, healthier families, better classrooms, safer classrooms, so that our dreams are able to dream beyond what they've always been told, especially in places like Anchorage. And I'm really thankful that I was always surrounded by my parents, but also my aunts and my grandmother, who always regarded my dreams as tangible things, because I definitely would not be at Columbia without them, and like going to grad school without them, and be where I'm at without them. So I think of those things when I think about, you know, how we can better decolonize and, you know, go back to how things were before. It's by supporting our younger generations, you know, they hold all our answers, and obviously like respecting our elders. I mean, duh, like, come on. But yeah, I think of our kids and I want better for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all do.
Doing our best.
Doing our best.
Yeah. Yes.
We have one last question for you.
And it's Caitlin's question.
It's Caitlin's question. It's Caitlin's favorite question.
Yay.
And some folks are, this is a tough one. But you will not be held to it, so it's okay. What are your top three favorite things about being Yupik and Samoan?
Yes, the food. The, I love dried fish, Harold, chop suey, lamb. What else do I love about it? I think being both, it's a really beautiful thing. I'm able to yuluk, which in Yupik means to dance. I'm able to siwa, which means dance, but in Samoan. So being a part of these two beautiful cultures, and to also see my parents too, like, that's healthy love. Like, that's something. I mean, I feel like I have it. I have a partner and he's amazing, but it's beautiful to see that, you know, and to see, you know, that our communities, we're not alone in what we face. And that I'm really thankful to have grown up with both aside me. That's my second thing. I think my third thing, this is hard to answer, like, those first two for sure. I, like, I want to say food again, because I feel like that deserves, like, a 2 out of 3. You don't even know. The food always hits, but, you know, I'm really thankful for the people, because I think, you know, like, Pacific Islanders, I think, like, we're super nice. Like, we're really nice people, and so are Yupiks. Like, we're very nice people. And what's very similar about our cultures is that we use humor and we roast. You know, you're a part of the family when you get roasted. So I think that's another thing I'm thankful for being in Samoan, is, you know, when I return home and I hear that first roast, I'm like, yep, I'm home. And the laughter around the table, you know, as we're eating. So I'm thankful for the laughter, for the beauty of our cultures, and for the food.
That's wonderful. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We do that one to, like, remind ourselves to love ourselves indigenously.
Yes.
Even all the things that we go through. Yeah, I think it's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always food.
And like I said, it's always the same three things.
This.
Everyone's got great food. Everyone's nice, and everyone loves to roast each other.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
It's yeah. So funny.
I mean, I think that would be my three favorite things as well.
I think so too.
The roasting.
The roasting.
Over food too. So like good food and just belly laughs.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think I'll be coming back to Alaska soon, because I keep dreaming about it. I've had 2 dreams about Alaska since leaving. So I don't know what to do with those.
You're going to be on Outlast. That's what's going to happen. We're going to put you in the forest. You're going to survive.
I think I could.
And win $1 million. Some terrible reality TV shows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. No. Definitely come back. It's great. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't, you know, I like, it takes a lot of work to organize Arctic Encounters, but, you know, conferences that I like, Elders and Youth Conference put on by Friends Alaska Institute. Go to conferences managed and done by Native people, because we slay. It's a slay. Like, FAI is amazing. And I hope that when you return back to Alaska, it's at a better time. And I don't know. Alaskans are super nice. But thank you both again. This has been so amazing. Like, I honestly feel like, because like these past couple weeks I've been so like, it's fast, after you come back from a work trip, like you still constantly move. You have to go to work, you have to go to school. These are things we have to do to survive. And so this conversation has definitely grounded me, and I'm super proud of the both of you, and yeah, super thankful.
No, we're the lucky ones.
Yeah. We get to talk to such amazing people, and we just get to hang out in our living room and hear amazing stories. So, yeah. And we're very, very thankful that you were able to join us, and thank you so much for sharing your story and sharing your knowledge with us. We're very, very appreciative of it, and we're very honored.
And it won't be the last time.
No. Now we always hit up people again.
Yes, and I'll see you in Canada too, because I think we're gonna be there in, or the fellows will be there in September now.
Oh, where?
They haven't chosen. They haven't chosen, but they said that we'll be in Canada.
Okay, cool. Okay, perfect.
Yes.
That is very exciting. All right, should we wrap her up?
All right, let's end this.
All right. So you can, we please, we beg of you, please, please subscribe, follow us,
Like, comment.
rate.
I saw, because our Zambia one has just been posted, and I saw that we have a rating of 4 stars.
Yes, they listen.
Ooh.
I mean, I know they listen, but
But they rate.
yes. You can find our podcast, Spilling Labrador Tea Under Cedar Trees, on, I say Google it, just Google our name. But you can find us on Spotify. You can find us on Apple Podcast, Pocket Podcast. Caitlin says Google Podcast. We're gonna look it up at some
You
point.
checked today, it's true.
It's true.
I'm not
Yay.
lying.
But we're on basically every major platform that has podcasting on it. Please check out our website. We have merch.
We have merch, we have new, but our end of our website ends differently now because we're that
Yeah,
much cooler.
we are. We try.
Yeah.
Yeah.
www.spillingtea.land.
Spillingtea.land. Yes.
Yeah.
Dot land. Because you know what? Hashtag land
Land
back.
back.
Live, love, land back. That
Yeah.
tattoo's still gonna happen
It's
at some point.
happening.
Yes. And as always, we are very thankful for your listens, and we hope you enjoyed this episode.
See you later.
Namoltis.